Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. State lawmakers wrapped up the special session on redistricting this past weekend, sending new district maps for state House and Senate districts to Governor Susana Martinez. She has vowed to veto them, and according to the Albuquerque Journal, Martinez says she was very disappointed with the outcome of the session. Lawmakers also passed redistricting maps for the Public Regulation Commission and the Public Education Commission, but they did not agree on maps for U.S. congressional districts. Both Republican and Democratic lawmakers blame partisan politics. There's been a flurry of lawsuits filed. What do you think? Should lawmakers draw voting districts? Or should the issue be decided in the courts? Who should decide this issue? We would like to hear from you this morning on the KUNM Call-In Show. The number to call is 277-5866, or you can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Joining us this morning to discuss redistricting, Mary Wilson. She's a lawyer and former president of the National League of Women Voters. And Stephanie Myers-Gibson. She is communications director for the Center for Civic Policy. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Stephanie, let's start with you. Can you briefly recap what happened in the special session that wrapped up this weekend? Where do we stand in the redistricting process right now?
Sure. So it was an interesting special session, that's for sure. Ultimately, where we're at, as you mentioned, several plans have been passed. The governor did commit to vetoing both the Senate and the House legislative plans. With regard to the Senate plan, four main points. Senate District 33, Senator Rod Adair's district, and Senate District 40 have been consolidated in this plan. That new Senate District 40 will then reemerge in Sandoval County. Senate District 12, Ortiz Pino's district, and Senate District 14, Senator Griego's district, have been consolidated under the plan. And that new Senate District 14 would reemerge on Albuquerque's west side. Senate District 13, Senator Feldman's district, and Senator Ryan's district, Senate District 10, are paired under this new plan in Senate District in a new Senate District 13. And Senate District 10 would then be pushed further north and more into Rio Rancho. In addition, there would be three Native American districts that are strengthened, Senate District 3, Senate District 4, and Senate District 22. Now, on the House side, there are some key highlights as well. In Albuquerque, we would see House District 26, Representative Al Parks' district, collapsed into East Albuquerque, and it would reappear as a new West Side district. On the east side of the state, we would have two Roswell districts consolidated, House District 57, Representative Quintay, and House District 66, Representative Woolley, consolidated. Then House District 66 would reemerge in Rio Rancho. On the southwest side of New Mexico, the incumbents in House District 38 and in House District 39 would be paired. Now, this was a result of the city of Silver City requesting that it be contained into one district. Previously, it was split. So those are really the main highlights of the changes proposed.
And so when you talk about collapsing districts where there are incumbents serving, this is a situation where those two people would then have to run against each other.
That's correct.
Right, which is one of the issues that came up. Mary Wilson, how does our process in New Mexico, where the legislature passes maps and then the governor has to sign off on them, relate to the redistricting? What is that compared to redistricting processes in other states across the country?
Actually, our process here in New Mexico is very similar to the majority of the states in the way in which we have the legislature redistrict both congressional districts as well as state House and Senate. In a few states, however, they have adopted an independent redistricting commission. For example, in California, this is the first year that they have tested their citizens redistricting commission. It's made up of ordinary citizens who went through an elaborate application process to be selected, 14 members, 36,000 applications to get a seat on that commission. And they are charged by the proposition by which they were created to not consider incumbency in the process of redistricting. And that particular aspect is very, very different from what you see when the legislature redistricts.
Well, and that was part of the conversation that we saw covered pretty consistently during this session here in New Mexico, this question of incumbency. Does that mean that there's a problem with our redistricting process here in New Mexico?
The League of Women Voters of New Mexico studied the issue a few years ago, and they concluded that we would do much better if we also had an independent citizens redistricting commission. It would take the partisan nature out of it. It would take the incumbency considerations out of it. And probably most importantly, it would take the expensive litigation out of it, perhaps. And I say perhaps because California right now is about to embark upon the litigation phase after the Citizen Commission came up with their maps.
And so when you're talking about the lawsuits in California, what kinds of lawsuits are there? Is it the same kind of situation where the citizens have drawn a map and then there is a community, a group who says this we're not represented properly here?
The main lawsuit so far, today is the last day for lawsuits to be filed in California, but the main lawsuit so far challenges their state Senate districts for a number of reasons, splitting of some communities, as well as in Southern California, not taking Voting Rights Act considerations into redistricting.
Who do you think should draw voting district lines? Give us a call. The number is 277-5866 in the Albuquerque area. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866 or send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Stephanie, we've seen this year a similar kind of situation as that which developed 10 years ago when Governor Johnson, a Republican governor here in New Mexico, vetoed some of the maps that were passed by lawmakers in the last redistricting session.
That's right.
That resulted in a lot of lawsuits. Mm-hmm. There have already been lawsuits filed just this week.
Right.
Who filed suit against the state 10 years ago and why?
There were several plaintiffs in that case. And, you know, it's interesting, Elaine, you bring up some really interesting points. There are a lot of strong parallels between what happened in 2001 and what happened in 2011. So a lot of what we're seeing on the legal side that's happening now did happen back in 2001. Back in 2001, during the special legislative session, the legislature actually passed seven plans, the majority of which were actually vetoed by Governor Gary Johnson. Now, the interesting piece of this is that the Senate was actually able to come together after the governor vetoed both of their proposals. They were able to come together after the special session, but before the 2002 regular session, and reach a compromise. And that compromise was, in fact, signed by Governor Gary Johnson and did not follow. There were no legal proceedings after that. Now, on the House side and the congressional side, the New Mexico State Supreme Court was then, they selected a judge, a district court judge. They consolidated all of the cases into one case for each map. So on the House side, there was one case. On the congressional district proposal side, there was one case. And that was the late Judge Frank Allen. And how he ruled, and typically what we see in the courts, is they adopt a least change approach, which means they want to rock the boat as little as possible. So they're not going to draw districts that are too dissimilar from the existing districts. And so ultimately what happened was Judge Allen then ruled on the congressional case, and he adopted a plan submitted by the plaintiffs that shifted just eight precincts to equalize the populations among the three congressional districts. Now that decision, that was not appealed. On the House side, immediately following that ruling, Judge Allen adopted a plan the legislature approved, but slightly altered it. He put eight districts to accommodate plans submitted at trial by the Navajo Nation and the Jicarilla Apache Nation. Now, what's interesting about that is that actually was appealed unsuccessfully by Governor Gary Johnson to the New Mexico Supreme Court, and that essentially was dismissed in September. So I think we'll see that also take place now. We know that there have been three lawsuits filed, and we'll just see what happens.
Thanks, Stephanie. Let's take a few calls. Let's go to Glenn in Jemez Springs this morning. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this. About a month or so ago, I listened to two women legislators, Republican, Democrat, who've been working on this issue for months, and it sounded to me like, you know, they had some great fair resolution to this whole issue. Now that I hear the League of Women Voters has put in another fair, reasonable resolution, then I hear that the governor is now blocking things, and this is going to cost us taxpayers. legal fees. And it seems to me there's such a contradiction between the governor saying, let's cut costs in every way possible, and now we're going to be stuck with probably a few million dollars of legal fees. I'd like your guest to comment on that contradiction. And then finally, I wonder if anybody's ever thought about a consequence for a governor blocking something that's reasonable, that's been thought out by both party people, these two women legislators. I think a governor needs to have something deducted from his salary when they're her decision to block this whole thing now in her party means that almost 2 million of us have to come up with money out of our shallow pockets at this time in our financial situation. I think she needs to pay for some of that money out of her salary. So comments on that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Glenn. Mary Wilson, your thoughts on the cost of litigation in redistricting?
Certainly, throughout the public meetings this summer that were held around the state, several times the League of Women Voters commented that we hoped this time around that we could get maps that everyone would like so that we could avoid that expense of litigation. Unfortunately, as long as redistricting is in the hands of partisan groups, there's always going to be that argument from one side or the other that they weren't treated fairly. Of course, also the Voting Rights Act has to be considered, and there can be very legitimate concerns about whether or not minority voting strength has been diluted. So we certainly don't want to do away with the concept of lawsuits altogether because there are legitimate reasons for lawsuits. I would certainly hope that if we have a much more robust public participation process in redistricting, then we really could have maps that took everyone's comments into consideration.
Do you live in a district where boundaries might change under some of the maps that have been passed? Perhaps you live in a heavily populated New Mexico district. Are you worried that your vote does not count as much as votes in other districts? Please call and join the conversation this morning. 277-5866 is the number locally here in Albuquerque. 877-899-5866 is our toll-free number. You can also send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Stephanie, what are your thoughts on Glenn's comment about who should have to pay for redistricting?
Well, I definitely think resources are questions that are on the minds of everybody right now. And I think that, to Mary's point, it's unfortunate that there is not more public participation during the redistricting process. You know, redistricting, it's not a super sexy topic, but it is really important. Redistricting is essentially the fundamental piece of doing redistricting right is fundamental to maintaining the integrity of our elections and our democracy. And so I really think that it's important for people to be engaged in the redistricting process, even in the state of New Mexico, where, you know, it's not decided by the citizens, it is decided by the legislature. Still, I encourage people to be involved and have their voices heard during the committee process. You know, Elaine, one more comment. Trip Jennings said it best, that in New Mexico, there's three parties that decide redistricting. There's Republicans, there's Democrats, and then there's incumbents. So considering incumbency, it lends itself to an innately political process when we're talking about drawing districts.
Mary, is this something that you've seen in redistricting processes across the country where the legislature is involved in the process?
Oh, yes. If you looked at any given state, you would see a great deal of similarities between those states and what has been done this year in redistricting and what has happened here in New Mexico. Some of the distinctions are that public participation process, the number of public meetings that are held, whether or not those public meetings are streamed live on the legislative website, whether or not there's an interaction at the committee meetings so that you get a feel as the public meetings are being held, how the legislative folks are feeling about the particular suggestions. And we did not see some of those elements this time around in New Mexico. And I certainly hope that we could have some lessons learned from all of the states that that have worked on redistricting this year, and particularly those states that are similar in process to New Mexico, where the legislature does it, because we certainly can learn from other states, and they can learn from us.
We put this question to our friends on Facebook. You could find us on Facebook. Just search for KUNM Radio. And Gonzo Olivas sent a comment in. He said, in the interest of nonpartisan redistricting, and then he put in parentheses, ha-ha, perhaps the courts should be tasked with redistricting. Aside from that, lawmakers should propose a number of redistricting alternatives and allow the voters to choose. Is there any situation in the U.S. where voters select redistricting maps?
Not from the standpoint of actually voting on maps.
What do you think about that idea, Mary?
I don't think too much of it. I think that the best process for the voters to be involved in is that public meeting, whether redistricting is done by the legislature or whether it's done by a citizens' commission. The voters should have adequate opportunity to provide their input during the process. Unfortunately, redistricting is a complex, technical sort of an issue, and I don't think it lends itself to voters voting on maps.
Stephanie, what are the considerations that are taken into, what are the things that are taken into consideration when lawmakers or independent councils in other parts of the country are looking at drawing districts? We know about maintaining the voting power of minority populations, ethnic and racial minority populations. Talk to me about how that, I think that some people might call that gerrymandering in the sense of maintaining the power of this community based on this identification, as opposed to the way that gerrymandering may be used in a negative way to maintain the power of a political party.
Sure.
And what other types of communities of interest are taken into consideration?
Sure. So, yes, so what you're referring to, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, was actually passed to ensure that minority voting strength is not diluted. We often see that dilution taking place through techniques called packing, cracking, and other forms of gerrymandering.
Explain what that might be.
So, packing is when there is a community that has residents of that community are heavily minorities. And so what the district would look like then is they would pack all of those minorities into one district, so they would only have one voice in the larger policymaking body, and then the surrounding districts would all be elected by groups that are non-minorities.
The majority groups.
Right, the majority groups, which is interesting to say minority and majority in the traditional sense, because we know that New Mexico is a minority-majority state. So I hesitate to say minority when it's really actually the majority in New Mexico, Hispanics and other traditionally termed minorities. So that's packing. In terms of cracking, it's the exact opposite. It's when they actually segment off and they crack those what could be a district that's packed in order to dilute the strength of that minority group. And so they are not able to elect all of those districts are not able to truly elect a representative that represents their interests. And so that's really concerning, because we know back in before, you know, the early 1900s, there was a lot of that going on in terms of diluting minority voting strength. And that is a concern. You also asked about some of the other principles of redistricting and what exactly are communities of interest. And initially one thinks, you know, communities of interest are primarily ethnic minorities, but that's not in fact the case. Neighborhood associations are considered communities of interest. Commerce, so business districts, to all types of commerce, agriculture, retail, industrial areas. It's important that they're also maintained and able to have the ability to elect a representative that represents their interests.
It's like not drawing a district line down the middle of the Nob Hill.
That's correct.
Commercial district.
Right, right. Or between, you know, the student residential area and UNM, straight down central. That would be considered a community of interest. And so, yes, also academic areas. And these are things that the courts are going to take into consideration. They're things that we know that the legislature did take into consideration. So it'll be interesting to see. And as I mentioned before, the courts typically do adopt a least change approach while still maintaining that they are consistent with the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and the equal representation piece that's constitutionally mandated.
So how are these communities of interest balanced with population? And we have a caller who said that we should have a proportional representation when districting. She didn't want to go on the air, but that was her comment, that redistricting should be strictly proportional.
Well, under the Constitution, one person, one vote is the rule. With respect to congressional redistricting, it has to be almost exact in terms of equal population in districts. At the state level, the Supreme Court has indicated that it can be even a 5 or 10% variation depending on the particular fact situations. So the Constitution really mandates that it be equal population.
I would add, if I could, Elaine, I think that the question of equal representation and ensuring that it is proportional, that's an important point, and I agree with your listener. But I would also add that these other considerations are really important, that we can't neglect them, that just proportion isn't enough, I think.
And talk to me about... So I keep thinking of New Mexico, where we have some very dense populated areas, and then we have some very, very large rural districts. And, you know, one of the comments that I've heard over the past couple of weeks is that there are some lawmakers who have such large rural districts that it's often difficult for them to be able to get in touch with their entire constituent base. And then you have these urban districts that may be growing very, very fast that are looking to see more the number of representatives that they have in our state legislature grow because the population is growing. You know, how is that kind of conflict of representation dealt with in the process?
Well, I have an interesting perspective on that because I live in a rural southwestern Torrance County.
You couldn't tell by your accent, Mary.
And so I sympathize with the comments that say, well, gee, we're losing our representation in the rural areas to the urban areas. But I go back to that constitutional concept that we have to have equal population in the districts, or as close as equal as we can get. And I say, well, I guess what we have to do in the rural areas is get more people.
Mm-hmm. I would just add, too, and encourage that the people that are there in the rural communities are involved. And I think that really speaks to what the League does in reaching out to those rural communities to encourage their involvement.
We're talking about redistricting. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We have in the studio today Mary Wilson. She's a lawyer. She is the former president of the National League of Women Voters. Also joining us this morning, Stephanie Maez Gibson. She is communications director for the Center of Civic Policy, the Center for Civic Policy. The number to call to participate in the conversation this morning is 277-5866, locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866, or you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
This October, KUNM commemorates its 45th birthday by offering a limited edition t-shirt in all sizes from children's large to adult extra extra large. It's an attractively designed teal 100% cotton shirt with 45s on the front and the full list of KUNM programs on the back, including this show. Check your mail for an envelope that features the t-shirt. If you're not on our mailing list, you can order at KUNM.org. Click Support KUNM.
We're talking about redistricting on the KUNM call-in show this morning. Let's take a few calls. Bill in Los Lunas, good morning.
Good morning. If the governor insists on taking these issues through litigation and public funds are needed through the vote of the House of Representatives, stop those funds, and she will stop the stubbornness of her. Thank you.
Mary, is that an option for the state legislature?
Anytime that litigation is brought against the state, it has to be defended, and so the money will have to be brought forth from someplace.
Let's take another call. Cheryl in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air. Oh, looks like Cheryl is not with us. Let's go to John in Santa Fe. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Good morning, Elaine. Thank you. One way to solve these problems is to have a multi-seat districts in which you do ranked choice voting, and that you get a proportional representation that way. If you have a five-seat district, any minority that can garner one-sixth of the votes plus one can elect their candidate. Now, people may say that, well, how do you get geographical distribution? It remains up to the voters then to run candidates from their area if they wish to have that. But at least they can vote for the candidate that they feel represents their local interests the best. And I know that's probably not permitted by state law, but that would solve the problem, and it all happens in one election, and no runoffs needed.
Super. Thanks for your call, John. This idea of ranked choice voting and multi-representatives.
Multi-seat districts, I think that...
Multi-seat.
Yeah, I think that John's right. This is a question of constitutionality that, you know, in order to change the number of seats that we see in the legislature, that would take a constitutional amendment and a vote by the people. It's an interesting concept, though, and I'd be interested to hear further about that. Mary?
It would be interesting also to know whether or not at the state legislative level that would meet U.S. Constitution.
Mm. Well, and the challenge there would be what exactly?
The challenge would be that it might indeed somehow impact the one person, one vote approach that the Supreme Court has adopted.
Got it. Let's take another caller. We have Senator Linda Lopez on the line. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Can you bring the legislative perspective to the conversation we're having this morning? I know you've been working very hard on redistricting for a very long time.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to Mary Wilson and, of course, the others who were traveling across the state with us this past summer. As we were looking for public input, and as Mary correctly described, some communities, there just wasn't what I was hoping for also in public participation. And I think that is the crux of what we need to do and work on, is continuously look for and find ways to make sure the public participates. But I will tell you is that, you know, the process, even it's in California with their own commission, has become very political, as a few other states too. It just, it's, I think, the nature of the beast that we're working with when you talk about redistricting and, you know, talking about our representatives and who, where, and what, and how we're going to redraw the lines. I know some of the concerns that were raised during this past legislative session, when speaking with many of my colleagues who did not travel the state with us, and for some of them it was a brand spanking new effort, and looking as to how we do the balance, and I think how you all were talking about this morning, is it's the balance of rural versus urban, mm-hmm. and the population shift that has happened in our state really, I think, drove home for many communities as to exactly what this redistricting session, especially this decade, and what we had to do. And I was part of it 10 years ago, too, and that whole issue on trying to keep everything the same, which is, as was correctly mentioned, the least change. But I don't know, quite frankly, if that would hold this time around just mm-hmm. because of the Middle Rio Grande population increase that we have at this point. So, you know, for me, the conversation that we had, and I can speak about the Senate, as the chair in the Senate side, that it was a lot of heartfelt wrangling that happened between the rural community representatives, as well as the senators here from the Albuquerque area and Doña Ana County and Santa Fe and such. And trust me, we had very heartfelt, some very tough discussions, too.
So, Linda, I want to ask you to stay on the line with us. I just got an email from a listener named Larry, and he says that the solution for rural, low-population areas losing representation is to increase the number of legislators. And he says otherwise people will lose out, and that his, in his opinion, that it should be more than 435 in Congress. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, there's two issues. One of them, when you talk about the state, just here for our own state senators or state House of Representatives, anything that we do to increase those numbers, of course, has to be a constitutional amendment. So it would have to be proposed during the legislative session, passed by both chambers, and then proposed, you know, for, at the next general election for it to see if our electorate would support that. And with regards to the congressional issue, you know, we do have certain population numbers that each community is supposed to represent, and we didn't quite meet that threshold this time. I think, quite frankly, if our economy had not tanked as it had the last 4-5 years, I think we would have gotten a lot closer to reaching that new threshold to gain another congressional representative in the House of Representatives up in Washington, D.C.
Is increasing the number of state legislators ever a conversation that you've heard in your time serving?
We kind of heard about it 10 years ago, and usually this conversation comes up every 10 years. And it was raised a couple times from a few folks this special session that we just finished. And I suppose that we may have more of a discussion during this next regular in January and possibly the one after the new election, because that would be one way to help address it, is that we do change that mix, because then it means each senator, instead of having 49,000, which is approximately what the numbers would show, you know, there could be a lesser number of people, which could help the rural community still maintain a bigger percentage of votes on Senate floor or also on the House of Representatives.
Thanks, Linda. Stay on the line with us. You're listening to the Call-In Show, the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. In the studio this morning, we have Mary Wilson. She's the former president of the National League of Women Voters. We're also joined by Stephanie Myers Gibson. She is communication director for the Center for Civic Policy. And we've also got Senator Linda Lopez on the line. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call is 277-5866 in the Albuquerque area. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866, or you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. I'd like to read a comment. Actually, let's go to a caller first. Let's talk to Cheryl in Albuquerque. Good morning, Cheryl. You're on the air.
Hi. This is a question for all of the members of the panel and the senator. I was at the redistricting hearings, and along with Senator Lopez, I was disappointed by the fairly low level of public attendance at all of them. But in a number of the meetings, there was quite a bit of feedback from the public and comments on their communities of interest and their preferences. And as far as I can tell, very little, if any, of that input was actually taken into account, except for possibly the Native American groups who had come up with their own redistricting plans.
Are you Cheryl, are you talking about a specific group of people that you could be specific with us about, an interest that you heard expressed at a meeting that you didn't see reflected in plans?
Oh, I have a long list. There's no point in going through it.
Okay.
But it's just the general idea. Suppose that New Mexico had an independent redistricting commission. How would they go about soliciting and acting on citizen input? How would they locate the right groups, get the public involved and invested in the redistricting process, and how would these changes be factored in?
Great. Thanks, Cheryl. I'm going to pause you right there. Our connection with you is a little bit wonky. Thanks so much for your question. Mary Wilson, about the independent commissions that do redistricting in other states, how do they get public participation? Are they able to get more public participation than has been seen here in New Mexico this time around?
Yes, but part of it is a factor of money. And any time that you undertake an outreach effort to get people to come to public meetings, it costs money. And so I know that the legislature this time around was severely constrained by funds available to with the number of public meetings that that they were able to hold and with respect to how they were able to tell people about those meetings. Let me comment, though, on another item that Cheryl mentioned, and that is the public meetings are wonderful for collecting information. But as Cheryl said, most of the time when legislatures are the ones that are charged with doing the redistricting, we don't know what really happens with that public comment. Unfortunately, when legislatures do the redistricting, it still seems very much behind closed doors. And one of the things that that distinguishes the independent redistricting commissions is the fact that their discussions, their interaction with the public on the comments, and how they arrive at the maps that they then suggest or adopt, if that's the particular process in that state, is very, very public and open. And so people know whether or not their comments were taken seriously and how the comments factored in.
Senator Lopez, can you speak to that? What was done with public comments that were collected exactly?
Well, public comments, of course, are posted on the website that we have, you know, through the nmlegis.gov website. During the redistricting process, you know, we did make mention of the comments that were made, especially for some of our communities. Many of our smaller communities are the ones who were very vocal, and I do agree with Cheryl and Mary, since they did travel with us. You know, Los Alamos had made a pitch in Las Vegas, New Mexico, about keeping their communities whole. And when you talk about the one person, one vote, it's very hard, especially with the population shift, to keep many of these smaller communities with one state representative or one state senator, because again, of the population shift that has happened in the state of New Mexico. And many of my colleagues, and I can speak to the Senate, raised many of the similar concerns, because a lot of these folks who attended those meetings were also in contact with their local legislator. So I think there's that mode of communication that also exists, even though it's not quote-unquote reflected in the map. We still had to deal with the population as you move, you know, numbers from rural New Mexico. One possibility could be, as one of the maps that had been introduced, is to have the little fingers that continue to move and spread towards the Albuquerque community also. And, of course, with the Albuquerque delegation, there were concerns about having rural New Mexico mixed with the urban areas. And there were also the other side of some of the smaller communities that did come up during session that had concerns about, you know, if we're connected with the Albuquerque metro or Las Cruces, those votes then could take over what our issues are here in the agricultural community. And those are things that we had to balance, also the interests of local legislators with other people that they're in contact with in their own community. And, you know, I know that Mary mentioned about the public process and stuff behind closed doors. The maps that were on the website that we did use, as those were the basis of what we used to build the maps and the final map that was adopted by the Senate. There's, you know, we had to do some things that had to, in my estimation, had to be done in order to make sure that we do have the one person, one vote, and still maintain communities of interest, as was explained by your other guest this morning, too.
Great. Senator, I'm going to jump in here, and let's take a call from John in Rio Rancho. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Good morning. I hate to disagree with the good senator. I know she's worked very hard to balance interests, but I find it odd that she is blaming smaller communities or saying that smaller communities are the issue when Rio Rancho is the center of growth, and yet she's presented a map, or the Senate has presented a map that allows Senate District 22, which is a Native American district, to knife into a larger community like Rio Rancho and take precincts out to dilute Rio Rancho's interest. And Rio Rancho is one of those communities where it was very clear that we made it very clear that we wanted that community interest dealt with as a single entity. And using those other districts, you know, Senator Lovejoy has never acknowledged the needs of Rio Rancho, and yet she ends up with a piece of Rio Rancho based on some sort of, it looks to us like, methodology that would simply dilute a conservative district.
Senator Lopez, your response.
With regards to the community of Rio Rancho, you know, and I'm not blaming, I would take issue with what your caller said about blaming rural communities. I do not do that. In fact, you know, that's far from where any of us in the legislature were coming from on this. But when you talk about Rio Rancho did gain a senator, and that was one of the drives from the interests, and the, you know, when we had a hearing there at Rio Rancho, we did work with all of the senators in that area also, because there is an issue of incumbency too, with regards to what could happen. And we did move one of the Senate seats that we crunched. That did show up over in Rio Rancho, where Rio Rancho now has, for the majority of the city, does have a state senator that will be elected, a new one, this next session, the next election cycle that comes up. So they do have one for the first time. They do have a senator that represents the majority, not all, but the majority of Rio Rancho City.
Great. Thanks, Senator. You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We have Mary Wilson, former president of the National League of Women Voters, in the studio with us this morning. Also, Stephanie Myers-Gibson. She is communications director for the Center for Civic Policy. And joining us on the phone line today is Senator Linda Lopez. Give us a call. The number is 277-5866 to join the conversation. You can also call toll-free 877-89 995-866. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with your calls.
The phone volunteer shifts for the KUNM Fall Pledge Drive October 15th through the 21st are just about filled. What we really need now are parking attendants and evening dinner coordinators. These shifts are just as important as answering phones. It's all good, and it all helps KUNM. So join in on the fun. Call Rob at 277-4516 to sign up for a parking attendant or evening dinner coordinator shift today. That's 277-4516. Thank you. The 9th Annual Southwest Gay and Lesbian Film Festival hits Albuquerque Friday, October 7th through Thursday, October 13th. The 7-day film festival continues to present the best in queer cinema with over 75 gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered films from around the world. Filmmakers and guests will also be on hand, making this a truly regional experience. For tickets, films, and venue info, log on to closetcinema.org. A message from the tax-exempt Closet Cinema.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're talking about redistricting, and we have some callers. Let's go to Mike in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just was listening to the conversation, and y'all were talking about smaller communities, and then somebody just mentioned Rio Rancho. But in a broader context, why isn't Bernalillo County, why isn't there an attempt to keep Bernalillo County whole? It's a political entity. It has borders. It has a county commission. It has a sheriff. I mean, so it is an entity. And it seems like to me the fact that Bernalillo County is sliced and diced between all three congressional districts dilutes the strength of the county. It's really kind of unfair in a very real sense. It would strike me as one organizing principle would be to take Bernalillo County and look around it to find something that would fill up, you know, that would equal that. But this business, you know, if you look at CD1, it's in like, what, four counties or three counties? I think it's like four counties. And then Bernalillo County is divided between all three CDs. And that just doesn't seem to be that seems to be more political rather than rational. And I'll hang up.
Thanks for your call, Mike. Senator Lopez, your thoughts on this challenge of distributing population equally, I think, is partially what Mike was getting to. Population equally, but also respecting these other communities of interest that he was talking about.
Well, and I agree that we do and should be working as much to try and keep, even just with Bernalillo County, as whole as possible, which Senate Bill 22, which was the congressional district plan that passed out of the Senate that died in the House, actually did try to do that, Mike. And what it was is that Paradise Hills, Ventana Ranch, and such have, in the last 10 years, and current, were a part of the Northern Congressional District. And what I attempted to do with the advice and work with my senators, too, is to bring Paradise Hills and Ventana Ranch out of Congressional District 3 from the north and brought it into 1. And if when you bring in that chunk of population, you have to lose population. So we did move Torrance County to the north with a District 3, and try to do a balance so that we could try and keep Bernalillo County as whole as possible. And when you do that, you're still looking for about 686,000 bodies, and we don't quite have that population in this county just yet. So you have to kind of meander and figure where you're going to find some communities of interest that we worked with and added Algodones this time, and just try to keep those lines as whole as possible. But we did bring in and try to keep in at least the Northwest Quadrant, which I have heard many a time over folks who wanted to be included in CD1, which they were in Senate Bill 22. But, of course, nothing passed, so this will go to the courts, as was mentioned by your other participant on the panel.
Stephanie, your comments.
Yeah, no, I would just reemphasize what the senator said, that they really did make an attempt to do that under Senate Bill 22, and it's in fact unprecedented that we don't have a congressional plan to send to the governor. Though there is speculation that even if we did have a congressional plan, that she would likely veto that. But I think it really comes down to a question of population. And so I think that that it'll be interesting to see how the courts handle it.
Mary?
I've been listening with interest to the last few call-in folks who have expressed questions for Senator Lopez about why didn't you consider this, why didn't you consider that. And it's interesting, and I know it kind of puts the senator on the spot, so to speak, but I'm contrasting that in my mind with the way in which the Independent Redistricting Commission in California went about very carefully in their final report explaining why they did each and every district the way that they did, even including with respect to why they created certain minority-majority districts, the advice that they got from their council on Voting Rights Act issues. And if we had that kind of document here to explain why it is that the different bills came up with certain configurations, I don't think we would be so much in the spot as citizens wondering, well, why'd my district end up this way?
I have two more listener comments I want to go to. First, let's go to Chris, who is on the line in Albuquerque. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine and guests. I think that we should have people who completely don't give a darn about who gets into office, Democrat or Republican. And I think the ideal group would be middle-aged anarchists, because they know the issues, and usually better than most voters, and they don't give a darn who wins. They are interested in communities, these communities of interest you talked about, and I really think that they're the only disinterested party, well, left. So I'll hang up and listen to y'all on the air.
Thanks, Chris. I want to bring one more comment into the conversation. This is a comment that was left by a listener on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for KUNM Radio. We asked for your comments on redistricting, and Brian Ara wrote, this is his comment, "It's become a quiet racial issue. Look at Orange County, California, Westminster," and he put in parentheses Asians, "and Santa Ana, Latinos." And then he said the majority vote for their race. Loretta Sanchez, he says in his comment, pretty much used Viva La Raza as her battle cry in her district's last election, in which she won. He says, put it in the hand of the courts. Senator Lopez, can you speak to this comment about how issues of race race and ethnicity play into the way that people understand redistricting?
Well, it is a consideration in that different communities here, the population of Hispanics here in New Mexico has grown. Our Southern Congressional District, number 2, actually is there at the majority Hispanic population number, and that's with all ages, not just voting. But when you look at some of the different other communities that we were working with during the this past redistricting session, which just ended a few days ago, we worked very hard with the Native American communities just to make sure, and Mary knows this, as does Cheryl and others who traveled with us, in the historical perspective, a lot of information was shared with us, especially when we met at Acoma Pueblo with our Native American communities, brothers and sisters, and, they just gained the right to vote. Was it 1949, if I'm correct? 1948, 1949. And there's a lot of injustices that have happened. The Department of Justice created a Senate seat over in southeastern New Mexico back in 1991 that was done by the courts. And that currently seat is currently held by Senator Lavelle, Carol Lavelle. And we did have to go back and tweak and make sure that we maintain that Hispanic district as we do others across the state of New Mexico. And I do believe that race does have a figure not just in our state but in many other communities. New Mexico is unique in our history, too, where we've always had an opportunity for Hispanics to be elected to statewide office. Many other states are just coming on board with that.
I think there was an announcement recently. We ran a newscast last night about how there's a Latino man running for Congress in Nevada, and that if elected, he would be the first Latino representative of Nevada. I want to get last comments from the three of you before the end of our show on this question of, in politics, deciding things like redistricting, where people in power have the opportunity to make decisions and where people who've been historically underrepresented over time are in some ways able to gain more access to power and not. Is that ultimately what redistricting is about? Let's go to Mary first.
I'm not sure that it's all that redistricting is about, but certainly the Voting Rights Act provisions, which enfranchise people who prior to the enactment of that law had their votes completely diluted, were not able to choose the representatives that of their choice, as the language is in the case law. They now have that opportunity.
Senator Lopez, can I get your quick comment on that question before we end the show?
I think what the Voting Rights Act has done for us is it does allow many of our diverse communities, whether it's Latino, Asian, Native American, African American, to make sure that they do have the opportunity in which to elect a candidate of their choice. And not necessarily does it always mean one of their own ethnicity, but at least someone that, and in my hopes, is that someone who pays attention to them and really is on their side when it comes to many different issues.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Stephanie, your last comments.
Yeah,
today.
So I agree with both what Mary and Senator Lopez said as last comments. I would also say that redistricting, to me, it's a matter of basic justice. And the concept of one person, one vote, fair representation, and individuals being able to elect a representative that truly represents their interest is extremely critical. And we just got to continue to encourage the public to participate in this process.
Super. Thanks, all of you, for joining us this morning. Mary Wilson is the former president of the National League of Women Voters. Stephanie Myers Gibson is communications director for the Center for Civic Policy. And we also have on the line with us this morning, Senator Linda Lopez. And you were the chair of the redistricting committee, right? Co-chair?
Co-chair. For the statewide and chairman for the Senate.
Got it. Thanks to all three of you for joining us this morning. Thanks to all of you callers who participated in the conversation, whether it was on the phone this morning. You also joined us using Facebook. You can search for KUNM Radio. You sent us emails to callinshow@kunm.org. You can find a podcast of this show on our website, kunm.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks so much for joining us.